On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
As we were hearing in the first hour, there is shortly to be a by-election to fill a vacant seat in Dublin Bay South. That is a home constituency of many aspiring candidates, all of whom happen to be barristers. Another one who happens to be a barrister who is already a TD for that constituency is the Fianna Fáil spokesman for Justice, Jim O'Callaghan, who's on the line. Jim, good afternoon and thanks for taking your call.
Thanks, Gavin. Good afternoon.
Were you surprised to hear of Eoin Murphy's departure from the Dáil?
Yeah, I was very surprised. And obviously, I got elected. I worked on the council with Eoin Murphy. I was in the Dáil with him as well. I had no inclination that this was going to happen. Listen, I wish him well in the future. Like, my own view, however, is if you're elected to the Dáil, you should really try to see out your full term. But listen, Eoin obviously had personal reasons as to why he wanted to move on. And there's going to be a by-election and Fianna Fáil will be contesting that. We have two excellent councillors in the area, Claire O'Connor and Deirdre Conroy, and either one of them will be an excellent candidate at the by-election.
There'll be a certain pressure on you as a Fianna Fáil incumbent TD for that constituency to try and bring home a running mate, won't there?
Well, there's certainly going to be pressure on me to ensure that Fianna Fáil performs well in the constituency. And I believe that we will perform well. It's going to be an unusual by-election. I don't know yet when it's going to be. It could be maybe in the summer or it could be in October or November. But listen, I'll work with whatever candidate is there. The good thing is we'll have the support of all the party concentrating on the by-election. And I think it'll be a great opportunity for Fianna Fáil to, you know, to resurrect and to grow again in that part of Dublin and to ensure that we put up a really strong campaign.
The party is only polling at 10% in Dublin. It doesn't seem very likely that you'd have any hope of winning the seat.
Well, who knows? We don't know how many candidates there are going to be in the by-election, Gavin. But you're correct in pointing out that this is a constituency that traditionally isn't a stronghold for Fianna Fáil support. Usually it's a strong Fine Gael area. But this is going to be a different by-election. We're going to have lots of different candidates. I don't think this is going to be about a binary choice between government and opposition. I think we're going to have lots of very good candidates in the field. As I said before, either Claire O'Connor or Deirdre Conroy will be an excellent candidate. And listen, as you know, by-elections develop their own momentum and their own issues, and I can't predict what's going to happen at the end of it.
That much is true, but to describe it as being a very different race to last year, I'm not sure how true that is, because when you look at the general election campaign in your constituency from last year, the only party that ran two candidates was Fine Gael. So surely on the face of it, the only difference is that Fine Gael support would be concentrated in one candidate, whether that be Kate O'Connell or James Gagan or somebody else. But otherwise, it should be broadly similar to last year, which would mean it's Fine Gael's to lose and you won't be at the races.
Well, I don't know about that. First of all, I think a lot of Fine Gael people would be unimpressed by the fact that Fine Gael has given up its seat in the constituency. So I don't think automatically that Fine Gael people will turn around and say, oh yeah, we have to vote for the Fine Gael candidate. I think lots of vagaries will come into this. There'll be lots of separate issues. I think one of the big issues will be about the country recovering from the pandemic. There's a big youth population in Dublin Bay South. Youth unemployment is high at the moment. So I think if we can reverse that, we get more young people back to work, we get a plan for getting students back on campus in September. We're reopening. Like, the inner city is within this constituency, that area of southeast Dublin. So those issues are going to be vibrant issues in the campaign. And I don't think it's just going to run in the orthodox way as would run in a general election.
So all the issues that you've identified there as maybe being concerns, the housing issues, youth unemployment and the young people in some wings of the constituency, all of that being true, why would they then consider voting for a Fianna Fáil candidate when they might be underwhelmed by what Fianna Fáil has done in government for those people?
Well, listen, Fianna Fáil hasn't been in government for a year yet. We've only been in government for about 10 months. I think our performance has been good during those 10 months. It's obviously been dominated by the pandemic. We put in very strong supports for people who lost their jobs. A lot of young people lost their jobs and the pandemic unemployment payment was put in place. We're trying to implement changes into the housing policy. Dara O'Brien is doing that. So people will judge us on the record of what will, at the time of the election, be a year in government. But they'll also look at the candidates themselves. And they'll recognise that this isn't a vote that's going to change government or opposition. But who's the best candidate to put into the Dáil? And I think when they look at either Claire O'Connor or Deirdre Conroy, they're going to see that Fianna Fáil has put forward an excellent candidate.
So how likely do you think then it is that Fianna Fáil can not only win enough of a first preference vote, but also attract enough transfers from across the board to be there at the finish line?
Well, I don't know, Gavin, because you know, this, as I said, is not a traditional Fianna Fáil heartland. It's not an area where, yeah, I'm sure the bookies aren't making Fianna Fáil the favourites. But all I know is that we will run an effective and strong campaign out there. and we will do our work on the ground. We will do our work online. These people who I'm suggesting, Claire O'Connor and Deirdre Conroy, have good records as councillors in the area. They're very hardworking people. And I think this election will be decided on local issues in the constituencies and the electorate assessing the qualities of the individual candidates. And if that happens, Fianna Fáil will be in a very strong position.
Yeah, the bookies certainly don't give your party much of a hope. But then again, there was one bookie earlier this week that was offering 10 to 1 that you yourself would win the by-election, which would be a curious turn of events.
Well, I can tell you one thing, that's not going to happen.
No. Do you have any particular support or affinity for either of the two candidates? Can you tell us which way you'd be supporting?
No, I wouldn't. I think they're both excellent candidates. I'm not going to now come out and name one or the other and thereby condemning the chances of the other person or damaging the chance of the other person. But I just know both of them are excellent, Claire and Deirdre. They're on City Council. They've done great work there. And either one of them will be an excellent candidate. And obviously, I think we will have a convention in the not too distant future. I've spoken to both of them. In fairness to all the candidates, this has been sprung on people very quickly. Last Monday, this came out of the blue. So as you know, by-elections can be very dominating issues in people's lives. So people have to be given time to just consider the consequences of it.
Yeah,
you know?
And have to consider the implications on their personal lives if they were to find themselves in Dáil Éireann as well.
It's a huge change.
But before I move on from general electoral issues, obviously there's always a challenge for parties that are together in coalition government to retain their own sort of identity or to distinguish themselves from those along whom they are serving. If Fianna Fáil were not to perform too well in this campaign, it would evidently underline that voters are finding it very difficult to distinguish Fianna Fáil's role in government from Fine Gael's role in government. And you yourself were very vocal last year about not taking a ministerial position because you wanted to help to safeguard a kind of a Fianna Fáil identity. What does a Fianna Fáil identity in government, distinguished and separate to those of Fine Gael and the Green Party, actually look like?
Well, let's not do a post-mortem on a by-election where we haven't even had the election results yet.
No, but then let's take it on its merits. 10 months into being a part of a coalition government, what is a Fianna Fáil identity and how does it differ from that of the government?
Well, Fianna Fáil's identity is very clear. We're a Republican Party. We believe in the reunification of the island. We believe in promoting business and encouraging people into business. We believe in providing social protection supports for people. And we believe in promoting Irish culture and heritage. They're the things that Fianna Fáil stands for. But I sometimes think people get too worried about that the identity will be lost whilst in government. If you look up in Northern Ireland that we'll be talking about presently, there are parties in coalition up there. It doesn't mean that they lose their identity because they're in coalition with other parties. So Fianna Fáil has an identity that people want to protect, want to preserve and want to see doing well in Irish politics. And really what is the main identity of Fianna Fáil at present is that if you want to vote for centre ground politics, if you want to avoid the polarisation that we have in Northern Ireland or the UK or in America, we need to ensure that we have a centre ground, centre left national party such as Fianna Fáil. And without us, we have two polarising influences that will send us down the route of America and the UK.
In fairness, I don't think there's any danger of voters mistaking the influences or the unique identities of the likes of Sinn Féin and the DUP. But nonetheless, point taken. You mentioned there the very first goal of Fianna Fáil on a general national basis is the unification of the country and its people. And obviously there is a fairly substantial poll this weekend in the Sunday Independent about that whole topic. You yourself have been quite vocal in recent weeks making contributions on what a new United Ireland would look like and some of the political structures that would need to be dealt with. What do you make of the fact that despite all this apparent commentariat focus on a United Ireland, that there still remains a clear majority of people in Northern Ireland who are in favour of the Union as it stands?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. And I think, in fact, the reason, I suppose, why there's a lot of emphasis on partition and the existence of Northern Ireland at present is because the centenary of partition and Northern Ireland is establishing now. But the Independent have performed a very useful service, I think, in conducting that poll. I think it's important that people talk about reunification. When you look at the Good Friday Agreement, it's not some sort of an edifice that we can just look at and admire. It provides a mechanism within it, not just for the protection of identities within Northern Ireland, but also for the change of the constitutional status of Northern Ireland. And obviously that only happens in circumstances when the majority of people in Northern Ireland think that is a worthwhile thing. But if you look at the poll in the Independent, of course there's a huge amount of work to be done in terms of trying to convince, I suppose, the majority of people in Northern Ireland that their futures will be better as part of a unified entity on the island.
Do you think that the shared island unit set up by your party leader and Taoiseach Micheál Martin does enough to do that? Because I think there are some people who think that the shared island unit is trying to stage, you know, a consensus as an end goal and not as a stepping stone towards unity.
No, I think it's a very good development, the shared island unit. I commend the Taoiseach for initiating it. It hadn't been done previously by any other previous government. But I think we have to be sensitive in how we manage the issue of discussing reunification. Sometimes people just get caught up in the desire to say, oh yeah, we want a border poll now. What's far more important is that we're able to identify what this United Ireland would look like. Mm. Like, I was on a discussion programme with a unionist politician a number of weeks ago up in BBC Northern Ireland, I think it was, and it was put to him, well, what about the proposal of a new constitution for a new Ireland? And he says, well, show it to me. What is it? Let's see. Tell me what this involves. So I think there's a big responsibility on people such as people in Fianna Fáil and in the south who are advocating United Ireland, that we tell not just the people of Northern Ireland, but the people of this country, what it would look like.
You might have seen the intervention of Prince Síos de Rossa, the former TD minister and MEP during the week, who questioned whether it actually really is a noble aspiration to want to achieve unity anymore, that it sort of is treated as this North Star, this kind of, you know, defining goal by a lot of people who aren't really sure how you're going to get there, but moreover, what the benefits would be when you do. And given today's poll showing how much appetite or how much expectation there might be for violence, if in the event of a border poll being carried, maybe there might be validity to question exactly what is the merit of seeking a united Ireland in the first place.
Well, listen, I'm not trying to ram this down anyone's throat. I believe it is a noble aspiration. It's the cherished aim of my party. But I fully recognise there are other people, such as Prince Síos de Rossa, who don't think it is worthwhile. But I think we also have to recognise what the legal situation is. And the Irish Constitution and the British Constitution and the Good Friday Agreement says that if the majority of the people of Northern Ireland wish to become part of the United Ireland, well, then that will be accommodated and facilitated. So like, that is the legal position. It's not just some aspiration. It is an imperative if it is the case that the majority of people in Northern Ireland want to join up in a unitary state. In terms of the point you make about violence, that was a significant finding in the independence poll today. And just to let your listeners know that the prospect of a united Ireland jeopardising peace in the south, 62% thought it could jeopardise peace, about 68% in the north. Listen, one thing that we should learn from the history of Northern Ireland is that violence or the threat of violence should never be the basis for any political decision. We saw what violence did in the north for 30 years. It achieved nothing. And if anything, it damaged the political objectives of those perpetrating violence.
If violence or the threat of violence should never be used as a basis for any political decision, then was the tail not wagging the dog for the last 5 years when we were obsessed with not having a land border, and our primary concern for not having a land border, and this is what is so precious to unionists at the moment, is because there was a fear of Republican violence? So how can we have been so precious about the return of a land border if we don't allow violence to shape our thinking?
I don't think our fear of a land border was primarily the threat of the return of Republican violence. I just thought the threat of a land border was going to undermine the agreement that had been reached between both sides of the island, ordinary people going about their lives. And it wasn't simply a fear of, a return of Republican violence. We cannot allow violence to dictate what happens on this island. On the centenary of partition, we need to recognise that what will decide what happens on this island is democracy and the votes of people. And we have decided and recognised that the people of Northern Ireland will have their own say in respect of this, and the people in the south will have their own say. But democracy will decide this, not threats of violence.
There's also an argument that perhaps trying to plan for what a united Ireland might look like, noble as you and others might think it is actually destabilising to Good Friday in the first place. Because although, yes, as you say, Good Friday does provide a means through which we could have unity again, it also copper fastens in the interim that Northern Ireland is no longer contested territory, that is the territory of the UK. And it might be seen as being inflammatory or unwarranted if the Republic was to start making plans for unity, and it could destabilise the North at a time when it really isn't justified.
I disagree with that, Gavin. When you look at the Good Friday Agreement, that's the agreement that's been put in place. The people in Northern Ireland voted for it. The British Constitution was changed to give effect to it. The people down here changed the Irish Constitution to give effect to it. Mm. And it does respect the different identities in Northern Ireland. But we also need to recognise that the world has moved on as well since the Good Friday Agreement was signed up in 1998. Those two communities of unionist and nationalist, Republican and loyalist, that we always presented as being representative of Northern Ireland, that's changed now. There's much more diverse communities up there. And the middle ground is where this debate is going to be won. And the middle ground recognise that Northern Ireland, in terms of the constitutional position, that there's a mechanism there to change it. In the same way as people of Scotland recognise there's a mechanism there to change their constitutional position. So like, we shouldn't shy away from it or be frightened of it. It's there and we need to prepare for it.
Yeah, could be talking a lot about Scotland depending on how the elections go this coming Thursday. Can I talk to you about the one other dominant theme of this week, which was the government plan on Thursday to start relieving and relaxing some of the COVID restrictions that we've been faced with for several months now. I hope I'm not putting words in your mouth to say that you have been somewhat sceptical about the need for restrictions to be quite as acute as they've been for the last few months. I think is that a fair reflection? And if so, what do you make of how belated it is now that we are finally moving on?
Well, I'll put my own words in my mouth if you don't mind. Sure. My own view is that restrictions were necessary, but I suppose there was a period when maybe they were excessive here. We've had a longer lockdown than most other countries in the world. Listen, it's a difficult balancing act for any government around the world. On the one hand, you've seen the threat of this virus, as we see in India. On the other side, there are people's liberties that have to be recognised and protected. Mm. I think on balance, the Irish government have probably got it right. But like, it was not sustainable that we just kept living with these level five restrictions. And that's why I welcome what was announced by the Taoiseach last week. We have a pathway now into the future and we can see the lifting of the restrictions.
But you have questioned before whether the restrictions were justified, given that the average age of death of somebody who contracted COVID-19 was beyond the average life expectancy and that there wasn't a significant number of excess deaths anyway. So do you think that the restrictions perhaps could or ought to have been lifted a lot earlier?
I'm afraid I'm going to have to correct you on that.
I questioned
Dr. Glynn at the Oireachtas Health Committee before Christmas, and I asked what was the median age of death, and I was given an answer. So I'm perfectly entitled to ask that question. And
no,
I think
of course
it's a legitimate factor to be taken into account. But listen, in terms of the restrictions, we now have a pathway out of them. The point I was always making was that we can see the consequences of the disease, the terrible consequences in terms of the number of deaths and people in hospitals. We don't yet see the consequences of the restrictions. Hopefully they won't be as severe as some people suspect. But like, in terms of youth unemployment, as I mentioned earlier, in terms of people's mental health, getting children back out playing sport, like, these are issues that also deserve to be weighed up when we're deciding what the path to take.
So do you think that perhaps there should have been scope or ought to have been more active consideration for relaxing the restrictions quicker than was done?
Listen, I'm not going to criticise the government. And I, in fairness to the government, they're in a very difficult position. If they depart from the advice of NPHET, they're heavily criticised for departing from the advice of NPHET. If they stick with the advice of NPHET, they're criticised for being too cautious. Mm. I just think, obviously, there was a recognition across the board in NPHET and in government last week that this thing needs to be moved on. The landscape has changed. As you said in your news broadcast, 1.5 million people will have the first dose of vaccine by this weekend. So like, the most vulnerable are being protected and the elderly are being protected. So we're moving into a different phase.
A texter has been in touch to 53106 to point out the broad, the real politics and the nuts and bolts on the ground of what might happen in the Dublin Bay South by-election. They're saying that, as you yourself have acknowledged, if Dublin Bay South isn't Fianna Fáil heartland, then surely Jim O'Callaghan would be petrified of the idea of having to run alongside an incumbent running mate at the next general election.
I don't have any fear of running along with any incumbent at the next general election, and we'll just wait. It won't be a decision that I'll make. It'll be a decision that'll be made by Fianna Fáil nationally.
It'd be tough going to try and retain two seats, though, in an area which, by your own admission, is not typical heartland.
Listen, if Fianna Fáil could win this by-election, there's nothing I would like to see more. It would be a vindication, I would have thought, of the campaign that we run in the constituency, a campaign that I hope I'll be centrally involved in running. So listen, there's opportunities there for Fianna Fáil as well as concerns that your texter mentioned.
You believe that you'll be director of elections for that campaign?
I don't know if I will, but listen, I'm going to be centrally involved in it, whether I am. That's a matter for the party leader, Taoiseach, to decide, but I'll be centrally involved in it and I'm looking forward to it. And it'll be an opportunity for, I suppose, to get back out there again. One of the consequences of the pandemic as well has been that for politics, it's very difficult to get out meeting people. We're all inundated with Zoom calls. Mm. But like, there's a great desire amongst all politicians to get out into communities and to meet people again.
And finally, and on that theme, before I let you go, this will be the first electoral test that anyone has faced in the Republic since the outset of COVID-19. If it doesn't go too well for your party or indeed for any of the other government parties, what will that say about the government's handling of the pandemic thus far?
Well, I think what it'll say is that we did badly in the by-election. Like, let's be clear about this. We don't know what the by-election is going to be fought on. They developed their own momentum. My own view is that the public will view the performance of the government in terms of the pandemic as being a pretty good performance. Like if you compare us to other countries, I know it's been very difficult with the restrictions, but listen, we're coming out of this. There's light at the end of the tunnel. We're going to have a good summer and we'll be prepared in the autumn just in case there are any other issues arising with further boosters. So listen, if it's going to be a vote on the government performance in terms of its attitude and response to the pandemic, I'll be very happy with that. I think Fianna Fáil will do very well in the by-election if that happens.
We will wait and see exactly when it comes and how Fianna Fáil does. In the meantime, thank you very much for your time this lunchtime, Jim. I know you're a busy man, so very much appreciated and enjoyed the rest of your weekend. That's Jim O'Callaghan, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin Bay South and spokesperson on Justice.